Prime ministers and presidents may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions remains.
Splendid. We were talking in the earlier part of the programme about accidents and tragically the biggest killer of children, which is what we're finding out from the launch of Family Safety Week with the Royal Society for the Prevention of Accidents. And to address this, we're delighted to be able to welcome from the Royal Society for the Prevention of Accidents the wonderful Sheila Morrell. Sheila, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
We were just talking in the studio about how clearly there's a balance between not using cotton wool and wrapping people. I mean, Sally, your sort of experience as a mum in terms of accidents, obviously you're looking after your children, but these things do happen, yes?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my children are older now. They're sort of 19 and 22. So it was very much, you know, when they were little, yeah, they did. Children are mischievous, they're inquisitive, they will jump off, they will open, and accidents do happen. But it's striking a balance, really, in enabling, for me, when mine were little, you know, enabling them to be able to explore and have fun and you know, in the garden and that sort of thing. And ultimately, accidents do happen. But, you know, you don't want, on the other hand, I didn't want to wrap them in cotton wool either, so it is striking a balance
and
for me.
And obviously, Ben, we've already heard your sort of trials and tribulations as a young chap, likewise Holly. But here we are, May the 4th. We're right in the middle of Family Safety Week. Actually, if you've got suitable tips, advice and support, how can you actually prevent accidents happening? I mean, Sheila, obviously the theme of this week is to actually say, OK, well, we've got that line that accidents will happen. Maybe they don't have to happen.
Well, they don't have to happen, but can I just say, it's not about wrapping your children in cotton wool, and we don't for 1 minute expect that parents and carers should do that. It is finding that happy medium. But accidents can be prevented. We have to take in consideration that children want to explore and investigate. It is part of development. But you can actually stop those nasty accidents happening in the first place. So it's about taking a look around your home to see exactly where you've got the problems. Try getting down on the floor and looking at your kitchen, for instance, from a child eyes point of view, and you'd be amazed in what you actually see that a child would find interesting.
From the point of view of Family Safety Week, looking towards that, is it something which we can get used to as an annual piece of May? I mean, we've obviously said we're celebrating Star Wars Day, May the 4th be with you, and so on. But in terms of having a Family Safety Week here, is this something which, from the Royal Society for the Prevention of Accidents, you'd actually say, yeah, this raises awareness, but remember there are obviously another 51 weeks in the year as well?
It is. That's quite true. We do run Family Safety Week, and we run it every year. But you have to think about all the other weeks of the year. It is actually about having in mind that accidents don't have to happen. We provide tips, advice, support, and resources to help keep the under five safe at home and on the move. You know, you can help to actually stop that disaster happening in the first place.
Ben, thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, it's quite an interesting thing, only because obviously accidents don't tend to be as a result of an intended thing by a child. But is there anything in particular that any normal tips or anything that most people might mistake in their home for which could essentially lead to a child injuring themselves? Is there something really common that you could perhaps tell us now that we could give advice to anyone?
Yes, the most severe injuries are associated with heat-related accidents, burns, scalds. So it's about making sure your cup of tea is put out the way, you know, about making sure your bath water is the correct temperature. And falls are very, very frequent. So falls from a height can be devastating. But the most devastating are those associated with loop blind cords and nappy sacks. And many parents don't actually realise that children can actually strangle from the looped blind cord. And we actually know of now 30 children that have died as a result of becoming entangled in the cord. So we encourage parents to actually put those cords up out of reach, tie them up on a cleat or a safety device, put them out of sight and out of reach of children. The other thing that parents don't actually think about are nappy sacks. Now, we do always have in mind that you keep plastic bags away from children, but nappy sacks are a little different. They're there. They're used daily by parents and carers. But again, we know 17 children that have died as a result of being suffocated or choked on a nappy sack.
Sally, just returning to the Lincolnshire show, I mean, clearly this is something that's health and safety is at the heart of the whole thing. But obviously, as a mum yourself, does this resonate with yourself in terms of, you know, thinking ahead and just doing that sort of basic planning, really?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's being being aware of the surroundings wherever you are with your children, and sort of as we've said, you know, sort of trying to take into account any potential hazards or anything. But yeah, definitely.
Later on, of course, today, you'll be hosting the first ever Facebook Live section between 1:30 and 2 o'clock, the Royal Society for Prevention of Accidents with Net Mums. It's only 30 minutes, but I'm sure it'll be 1,800 seconds of sheer magic, Sheila. I mean, there are also sort of all sorts of other things that are coming together from that point of view. Would you like to just share some of the things that are available in terms of highlighting this and making sure that people are aware of the challenges?
Can I just say, we have actually put the Facebook back to 2 o'clock.
Well, I'm glad you said that, actually. We've got tuned in early. So it's 2 o'clock to 2:30 then. That's the Facebook.
2 o'clock to 2:30, and we are looking forward to people joining in with us. They can also visit our website, www.rospa.com, /Family Safety Week, where they can actually download tips, activity sheets, and help and support with regard to child safety in making their homes safer.
One of the most significant and tragic lines from the press coverage that we covered for this was that mums and dads who lost children in accidents often say that they didn't know about the potential danger until it had tragically affected their family. It's too late then. I think what you're actually trying to do here is very commendable, and more power to your good self. A final little plug, I think, Sheila, for the Royal Society of the Prevention of Accidents websites. Presumably it's www.rospa.com?
It is, yes.
With, of course, the /Family Safety Week. Have you had a safe and secure telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Thank you very much.
Excellent. Sheila Merrill, many thanks indeed.
Thank you. Bye.
By various speculative fiction writers that as we head through the centuries, we look back at some of the surgical procedures of the 20th century and say, how invasive, how primitive. And perhaps one of the ways in which we can begin to address that is with the recent survey produced by fibroidsconnect.co.uk, and indeed the launch of that particular website. The particular sort of issue we're going to be talking about, of course, is the issue of uterine fibroids. And to address that, we're delighted to be able to welcome general practitioner extraordinaire and all-round wonderful soul, Dr. Sarah Jarvis. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning. After an introduction like that, I'm quite looking forward to hearing me speak.
Oh, wonderful. And we also have Helen with us as well, I believe.
Yes, good morning.
Excellent. Sarah, if we can come to you first and foremost, just talk to us about uterine fibroids, because people might listen to that and think, yeah, OK, I sort of know about these kind of things, but these are things that in essence could have led to what we said in the introduction would be invasive surgery and so on.
Absolutely.
Which clearly you don't have to look at the legal ramifications of that, might not be necessary.
Well, here's the good news. Fibroids are not cancerous. The bad news is they can cause an awful lot of symptoms. So they're non-cancerous or benign growths inside your womb. Clearly, that means they only affect women, and they affect women in spades. About one in four women develop one or more fibroids during their lifetime. They don't all cause symptoms, but heavy periods is by far the most common symptom. So you don't tend to have irregular periods or bleeding between periods regularly, but heavy periods are one of the big problems, bloating or swelling. I've seen patients, particularly women of Afro-Caribbean origin or women where there's a family history of fibroids, because those are two groups who are much more likely to get them, who've had wombs which have been increased so much by these non-cancerous growths that they look about 6 months pregnant. And I've had women who are as white as sheets and can't function because their periods are so heavy. And yet, the tragedy is so many women don't know what is normal where periods are concerned. So they will almost crawl around trying to cope, trying to carry on as normal, not even realizing that anything is wrong. Fibroids can also press on your bladder or your bowel. They can cause pain when you make love sometimes. Occasionally, not often, they can be a cause of miscarriage or problems with fertility. And occasionally, they can cause problems during pregnancy. But bloating, swelling, heavy periods, those are the things that they tend to cause. And indeed, as we know, people who suffer, suffer a lot. And Helen has certainly suffered.
Yes, Helen, turning to your good self, would you like to just share with us your own particular narrative in this area?
Yes, I discovered I had fibroids from when I was in the bath, lying on my stomach, and I felt as if I was lying on stone, and that was what triggered it all. Even though I was probably having all the symptoms, I didn't connect the two. Went to my GP, and she was great. I was having, essentially, if I describe what I was going through, I was having heavy bleeding, which has led to anemia, which essentially means I have to go to the hospital to get an iron drip to start feeling better. I had one of the fibers sitting in my blood, on my bladder, another one on my bowels. It affects, you've got side pains as well. It affects the kind of clothes you wear, whether you go out or you don't go out. You're just extremely exhausted, tired. You don't really want to do anything. And whilst all this is going on, you still have to continue to function on a day-to-day level, going to work. And it's actually affected what kind of employment I choose. I work as a contractor. That way, if I get really tired, then I can stop for a while and then go back in again. So it does affect everything, even though people think, oh, you're coping. I think as women, we try and just get on with it. Well, getting on with it is not helping your health at all.
Absolutely. Sarah, returning back to your good self again, I mean, clearly the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Women's Health has highlighted concerns over standards of care for this condition. I mean, we've heard of the British stuff, stiff upper lip, but this is taking things to ridiculous extremes, really.
I could not agree more. So two-thirds of women were not satisfied with the information they get. And in fact, 67% of women got most of the information from the internet. Now, that's great if you do go on to a really high-quality website like fibroidsconnect.co.uk, which you highlighted in your introduction, because you'll get all the right information there. But unfortunately, of course, there is an awful lot of nonsense and twaddle out there. So 12%, one in eight women with fibroids, took at least 1 year, often 2 years, from when they were diagnosed to when they got treatment. And 70% of women, I think this is the statistic that really scared me in this survey, 70% of women were told about hysterectomy. Now, hysterectomy for fibroids is very much these days a last resort. There are so many other options out there. There are medications. There are medications to relieve the symptoms, purely to relieve the heaviness of the periods. But there are also now medications to shrink the fibroids. And the NICE guidance, which has just come out on fibroids, has introduced new options in terms of treatment, which we can use for fibroids which are causing anemia. So they've got a new treatment option. But they also recommend several methods of surgery. So as well as hysterectomy, which I think should very much be a last resort, you can remove the fibroid itself, either through a telescopic procedure called a laparoscope through your tummy, or by going in hysteroscopically, that's through the ladies' bits. And then there's endometrial ablation. So you remove the lining of the womb. That doesn't work for all of them, but can work for some. Something called focused ultrasound, where you send pulses of high power ultrasound through the skin of the low tummy to target the fibroids. You can target it very precisely, and you can shrink the fibroids. Or you can pop a tube in, you can cut off the blood supply to the fibroid. So there are so many options, and yet so many women out there, 70%, were told about hysterectomy. From my perspective, that is a last resort. That's right at the bottom of the list after you've heard about all the other treatments, both medical and surgical.
Is there an age element here? Is it a case of people are more likely to be affected by uterine fibroids later on in life? What's the general chronological aspect?
The good news is that because this is largely related to estrogen, the female hormone estrogen, that does mean that if, for instance, your estrogen levels are higher, so for instance, women who are overweight are more prone to fibroids because that does affect your estrogen level. Women who started their periods early will have higher levels of estrogen because they started getting estrogen early. They'll be more likely to be affected. The good news is that fibroids do pretty much always shrink after the menopause. The question is, can you stick it out till there? And when you've heard things like Helen's symptoms here, you know, she wasn't able to have a normal life.
Absolutely. And Helen, I mean, from your own perspective, the kind of information that we've been talking about today, and obviously fibroidsconnect.co.uk, is it the sort of thing which you'd say, yes, actually, that's what we need?
It is indeed. And also to educate young girls at school from the outset that, you know, what's a normal period and what's not a normal period. I think that's the biggest problem. I had that, and I'm a full-grown woman. So I feel for the girls that don't know what's to be expected of them as far as like whether they've got fibroids or not. I think it's really education from school, whether it's a biology lesson or sex education lesson, and also from mothers to daughters as well. We need to talk about it. It shouldn't be taboo. It shouldn't be a form of embarrassment. You're sick, you're ill, so your body isn't functioning the way it should be functioning.
And
for you to be so tired, lethargic, and not able to do anything, it's not a way of living, really, to be honest. And there's also long-term issues. I've got permanent anemia. I have to go to doctors for B12 injections every 3 months or more. I have IBS as well. So,
well, we certainly wish you well with respect to that. And indeed, I'd have to turn around and say it's another sort of word as well, communication. That's
absolutely
the essence, to actually
Once
ensure that
know.
We're communicating about this. Helen and Dr. Sarah Jarvis, a delight as ever. Many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Thank you very much.
Time now, 22 minutes past 9 o'clock. Well, I actually got quite 22 minutes, just a smidgen before 22 minutes past 9 o'clock. Sally Monday is in the studio. Sally, for once, we haven't given your official title as far as the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society is concerned. So please share with us.
I am the Sponsorship and Trade Sales Manager. Do you want to know what that means?
Always useful. Go on.
Yeah. So I'm responsible for all of the trade stands at the Lincolnshire Show and the catering concessions, that sort of thing, and in generating sponsorship for the Lincolnshire Show as well. And I also look after the food and gift fair, which we have at the end of November as well. So
it is a truly wonderful time as well. As you know,
yeah.
I've been regular attendees at the food and gift fair,
yeah.
So it's all worked splendidly. More news about the Lincolnshire County Show coming up in a few moments, hopefully with William Sitwell, and then a variety of other bits and pieces. And we'll be asking Holly and Ben, having had a chance to peruse and look through the programme. Holly's choking with the emotion of it all, even at this moment. It's wonderful. It's a drink of tea or something, or indeed some water. Marvellous stuff. Because if we're preventing those accidents from happening, we need to ensure that there's some water around. Otherwise, it would be a case of Sally would have to provide the Heimlich manoeuvre for Holly, and who knows what could actually happen. It would just, frankly, it could be carnage.
Fraught with danger.
On the wall, and it's in between.
And so, Sally, we can reach that time of the show, which I know you always anticipate with great eagerness and enthusiasm whenever you're joining us on the programme. It's the William Sitwell slot. Yay! William, where are you at present, sir?
I'm at Waterloo Station.
Oh, right. Are you...
I just missed my train, but I'm relaxed.
You see the dedication that he actually provides, you know.
So casual.
Exactly. It's that sophistication. Only Roger Moore's incarnation of Brett Sinclair in the 70s series The Persuaders can match that level of sang-froid. It's fantastic. It's very good. Sally, any quick questions for William, such as what's the weather like in Waterloo? No, only kidding.
What's big and happening in London at the moment, William?
What's big and happening in London?
Yeah.
Well, there's a bit of a flurry of gossip, isn't there, surrounding Buckingham Palace, what's happening there. Mm. So let's hope that the Queen and her staff have had a good breakfast this morning.
This
Maybe
is so true.
Maybe she's had some good, you know, some scrambled eggs and some nice field mushrooms.
Yeah.
Who knows?
This is great. Now, from the point of view of events that really royalty will shortly be attending if they don't already, we have to say that the supper club that William has actually launched is, again, well worth accessing. And, Sally, I know you're particularly interested in finding out details of the next supper club, June the 16th, so a week before the Lincolnshire show. Marvellous. I just love that announcement. It's great. You know, it's so quiet. Could you ask her to speak up a bit? You know, she's
can't quite hear her.
Exactly.
What platform do we need to be on?
Exactly. Pardon? We need to know. But can you hear us, William, or has this completely blocked you out?
I can hear everything. You should just keep broadcasting.
Well, exactly. That's the way forward.
Put off by mundane announcements.
And of course not, because it's what the whole rail services are providing for us. The Western Supper Club and this Supper Club scenario, which is an exclusive scenario, already Sophie Chapman has said, booked William, sounds delicious. Natalie Water said, wow, this looks amazing, wish I was still living in London. Nicola Monk, so pleased to have booked our tickets, didn't book quickly enough for the first one. What's happening with this genius idea for the Supper Club, William?
Well, I started this about a couple of months ago, and I'm lucky enough to live in a beautiful old house in Northamptonshire. And you know, we got to keep the roof on the top of it. So because I've been, you know, mincing around in the food world for a little while, I thought that I might, you know, add my energy to the supper club phenomenon. And you know, so each month I have really famous or a really... I'm trying to get away from this woman, but wherever I go, she's
relentless. Don't worry, it's fine.
So I'm getting famous chefs and I'm getting great London restaurateurs to come and cook, and we do about 48 covers, an amazing rare food which I can bring to the people of Northamptonshire, or indeed Australia, which is where Natalie, I think, is from. So if Lincolnshire is feeling it needs to be fed, and it wants a bargain dinner, five courses cooked by an amazing Irish chef who runs Picture, which is an exquisite British restaurant on New Cavendish Street in London, then go on to Eventbrite. Book away.
Just sounds tremendous. Now, the other thing was, Katie Grimmison, who's listening from Birmingham, sent us some wonderful news about your good self in the Birmingham Mail recently, with the classic line, a cookbook that will sit well with everyone. You just love provincial journalists. Genius stuff there.
I'm glad the Grimmison spotted it. I don't know about it.
Well, the official line was, William Sitwell tells Ella Walker about rounding up the brightest foodie talents for a new compendium of British grub. That was the official title from that point of view. And I think it's fair to say, Holly, a very fetching photograph of the Sitwell Meister there in full-fledged form, as far as Birmingham Mail is concerned.
Full-fledged form?
Full-fledged form, exactly.
I didn't know I could develop my form to be fully fledged, but that's very... reassuring.
We like to think so. Anything else you'd like to add, Sally, in terms of life, supper clubs, train announcements, any of the sort of areas?
Yeah, I'm going to be looking into the supper club. I'd love to be there, but the 16th of June just might be pushing it a little bit for me, so I might have to look to the next one.
Yeah.
How often are they, William? Every month,
the
do
next,
you say?
The next one will be, I think, July the 21st, and Aldo Zilli is cooking an Italian feast.
Ooh.
All dedicated to the Basil plant. So every dish will have basil in it. From starter, main course, from antipasti to primo passati to secondi piatti to dessert, there'll be a little hint of basil.
Excellent. Mm.
It just
sounds
shows those wonderful things there. And one day, I'm sure William will turn up for the Lincolnshire Show if we can prize him away from Northamptonshire.
Well, if I go to the supper club, then surely it's only right that...
That sounds like the beginnings of a deal,
up
then.
Up the A1.
William.
We'll do a relay. The moment you walk into my house, I shall depart to Lincoln.
As ever, he's just got this joie de vivre.
And we'll have the lady in the background at Waterloo announced.
I think the lady in the background is actually, I mean, you should, in many ways, William, just ask her, has she had a reasonably interesting telephone announcement? And indeed, is she likely to make more announcements as the day proceeds? But apart from that, Holly, would you like to put those last two questions to William, please?
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning, William?
It's been epic, and I think I can't believe how well prepared you've been with your questions this morning.
Oh, yeah.
But I think we should talk about insects, and we should talk about alternative proteins soon. I think you need to educate your village about why we should all start eating crickets.
So back to insects and eating locusts and various other matters from an entomological point of view.
Not locusts, but yeah, cousins of.
Magnus Pike was a great believer in fried locusts. Very crunchy, he used to say. Of course, Magnus is no longer with us, but, you know, he quite enjoyed it at the time, which is great. Next question, please.
And will you be joining us again next week?
I hope so. I mean, what would life be?
We've had a little insertion from Katie Grimerson. Bless her. She's tried ant gin. Ant gin.
What colour
Good.
Is it?
Yeah, there we are. I think we kind of lost it just as various other things. Well done, Katie, for trying some ant gin. Bless her heart. It's probably still from Birmingham. She's still recovering from Lidrick Drive. A round of applause for William Sitwell, please. Yay! As well on the walls of the world is, once you've enjoyed the delights of sci-fi London, make your way up to the Lincolnshire Show. Isn't that right, Sally?
Yes, it is.
Exactly. Louis Savvy, welcome back aboard the production. Louis, of course, who Katie Grimerson said he's just got such a fantastic voice. It's just, you know, Katie in Birmingham, she just thinks you're the greatest ever, Louis. Why not?
Thank you very much indeed.
Exactly. So we've just spoken to
Good William. Morning, everybody.
Yeah, we've spoken to William Sidwell from the John.
Sally's face there was class.
That's what you call savvy savoir faire.
Oh, it is.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, very much sort of then.
Actually, my voice is going. I've been talking pretty much non-stop since last Wednesday.
Well, that, of course, was the start of the 2017 Sci-Fi London event. Tragically, I haven't been able to get down. I'm still trying to squeeze a couple there. But literally, you've had Sci-Fi Day. You've had all manner of exciting things there. Louis, before we get into what's been happening, would you like to put those last two questions to Sally? Because she has to leave us now to do exciting things in her wonderful role at the Lincolnshire Showground in terms of sponsorship, marketing, health and safety.
Most importantly, health and safety.
And the Lincolnshire Show, which is happening on the 21st, 22nd of June. Louis, last two questions for Sally, please.
Have you had an interesting experience on Soarin' FM?
I've had a very interesting experience on Siren FM this morning. Thank you very much.
Has it been a safe one, Sarah?
It's been a very safe one.
Very good.
Good, good. Yeah. And will you safely return to Siren FM?
I will safely return to Siren FM in the near future.
There you are. I see.
Fabulous.
Fantastic. Now, moving on, and let's not go into Ant Gin again, because I still don't know what Katie was talking about then. Let's talk about Sci-Fi London and the Film Festival. I presume it's... Well, Holly, you're here. It's the first time you've had a chance to speak directly to Louis, since, of course, submitting as director of the Midwick Drivettes, the movie as well.
Absolutely.
And I've suggested, Louis, that she should actually post on Facebook an additional one with the voiceover. Because, Holly, just explain to Louis why, although what you submitted was the best you could put together at that time, there was a technical challenge which meant you didn't get the whole story for takedown.
Yeah, well, we did. I sent the final draft to everyone and said, what feedback, from because that's the first time they saw it. They said, okay, put a voiceover. So I did. And it didn't export, or I clicked a button and it undid it or something, so I thought I exported it and sent it, and realised I hadn't, so I'll have to fix that.
Well, you see, therein lies the challenge, 48 hours to get it all done, and things can go wrong.
Yeah, so. And I was on a train when they spotted it as well, so I couldn't have re-edited it, and it was just,
Oh dear. Well, what you made a film in a weekend, which is an achievement in itself, so now what you need to do is fix the error, and then post that on your website as to here's the director's recap.
Exactly.
Yes, which
be precise thing. No, we'd be waiting from that point of view. For the connoisseurs, Katie Grimmison has again contributed, bless her heart. She's working, but at the same time, as a search engine optimizer, she can also send in top material to us. Ant gin is actually gin made from red ants. It's quite nice and very citrusy in flavour.
Mm. I'll pass, though, thank you.
Well, just... Ben, don't be so...
Don't
be so parochial. A little bit of ant gin there.
I'll stick to normal gin, I think.
Does that count as vegetarian gin or not? Would that... Cause I think
if it's made from red ants, it can't be vegetarian, can it?
No. Well, they're insects, you see.
I mean, is there any meat on there? I don't know,
Whereas regular gin would be vegetarian, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Hopefully.
These are messages which clearly we need to ponder for Sci-Fi London 2018.
What I didn't realise is that you can get vegetarian parmesan, which I thought it was already vegetarian.
I'm actually a hardened carnivore, but one of the guys...
I'd never have guessed, Louis.
Yeah, one of the guys on my team is a vegan, and last week he bought... There was a pop-up restaurant, and they now have a shop in Hackney called Vegan Fried Chicken. It's made from seitan, which is a sort of wheat gluten, and it's fabulous. It's just like eating, that awful chicken chop corner.
With the curdle, precisely.
Greasy fingers.
And every now and again, your body tells you need to have that kind of... Well, it's not really a food group, is it? But vegan fried chicken is amazing, absolutely amazing. It's just like cheap, crap, horrible fried chicken.
So there we are, Ben.
But for vegans, there we are.
A way to take it.
Do you get the greasy fingers, though? That's what I want to know.
Exactly.
You do.
So, Alex, we have the awards for the 48 hour tonight.
Yep, I know.
We'll have a winner for the tweeting out about 8 o'clock tonight. So.
Will you be checking that out online?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Yes.
Part of the spirits, the esprit de corps, and all the wonderment that's actually there. And
marvelous.
Sci-Fido, is that on that's still to happen? I think is Sci-Fido.
No,
still...
Sci-Fido happened last weekend.
Oh Lord!
And,
yep.
And a dog dressed called Mariron came as a dog from Interview with a Vampire. And very ornate costume, and it won. And we also had a Doctor Who and a Wonder Woman and a few other crazy things. So there's a few pictures online now. We'll be putting a lot up next
week.
We're
pulling up the Sci-Fi London Sci-Fido event, even as we actually have this telephone conversation, and the excitement is just manifested there. And we see in terms of the dog, that there we have it. Yes, I mean, I think there we are. That's the winner. Sci-Fi London Film Festival. Who said humans deserve all the fun? Sci-Fi London dog star photograph and Doug's dogs. Yeah, you see, didn't think Doug Brown had a little fun on that basis. But there we are. Doug's dogs, not of course the other Doug Brown, teamed up and organised the fourth edition of Sci-Fi Day, the dog cosplay, held in Juju's Bar in the old Truman Brewery. And just genuinely, what can you say, Holly? I mean, you know, that's so I'm just astounded we didn't manage to get there this year. We will be there next year. Little OJ, Oliver Junior.
Shark
costume.
You've got
Martha the super cute Schnoodle Schnauzer, cross poodle. This I feel makes life just worth living, really. And there goes the whistle.
We just had a bit of news as well, by the way, on our closing night film, called The Risen. We have the world premiere of it. It's a British horror sci-fi film. Lee Latchford Evans from Steps is in it.
Wow.
And he will be at the festival on Saturday night. So we're all looking forward to strutting our stuff.
He's a nice bloke, is Lee. I mean, he won't know me, but I've done a couple of interviews with him. And actually, they're all okay in Steps. So in fact, although I haven't met Lisa, which is sad, really, because I always thought Lisa was lovely Welsh lass, basically. Lisa, I haven't sort of met, but, you know, the other, Claire, wonderful, are all great from that point of view. Happy Star Wars Day, by the way, Louis. I know Phil Lewis,
thank you very much.
Early in the programme, didn't really sort of take it. He was trying to push the Mexican May the 5th celebration of holidays. It's a political thing, obviously, from that perspective.
I'm sure.
But life continues. All sorts of things are happening. I suspect if I say the words Sci-Fi London 2018, you'll say we're already planning.
We are, but I can't give you the dates yet. So, but probably the same time of year, around the first May bank holiday.
Well, we're going to be squeezing in a little, I thought, with our dedicated... Have you managed to hook up with our usual designated reporters for Sci-Fi London, Fiona and Alan? Have they managed to connect with you?
They've been in the house. They've been seeing some films.
Marvellous.
So, Well. Yet to hear any comment back from them. I haven't seen them enough to see what their favourites were.
We'll ask Alan in a few moments. So, because, I mean, Ben's always delighted to speak to Alan Stevens because, in his own words, it does his head in. But there we are. It just goes on.
I'm not a massive sci-fi fan. That's the problem.
Well, that's why you need to come to Sci-Fi London.
I can do Star Wars. I do Doctor Who up to 2011.
But after 2011,
It didn't last too long.
We'll work through that. No. Louis, final choice. Do you want to go classic Steps with 5, 6, 7, 8 or latest Steps release, Scared of the Dark?
Latest Steps.
Quite literally, Scared of the Dark. Last two questions for Louis, please. Holly.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning, Louis?
I have indeed.
And will you be returning next week?
I might be asleep because the festival will be over. So.
Soon.
But we could certainly try.
Louis, I tell you what we might try and do. We'll bring you on board via that delightful device called Skype, and then you can maybe connect with some of the rest of the team in LA and various other areas. So let's look
indeed
at that. Yeah,
that's a good idea.
A round of applause for Louis Saville, please. He's never afraid of the dark, or indeed scared of the dark.
What you can see can hurt you, they say. But I've been blind too many times before. Never see it coming your way. Shadows and secrets hide. Give me the bright lights of the dance floor to shine inside this broken heart of mine. The way you move, I'm forgetting all the ghosts in my mind. Just say you're mine and stay by my side. Don't say you're leaving. Don't turn out the lights. I scream. Don't let the darkness come and hold me. I need someone cause I can't be lonely tonight. Come on, baby. Come and take me. Yeah.
Yes, Holly, both Fiona Moore and Alan Stevens were both at the Stone Tape Symposium that we actually hosted a few weeks ago, and that's why, amongst other things, they were our official designated reporters for Sci-Fi London. Oh, we're on air. Hello, Fiona. Hello, Alan. Good morning. How are you?
Okay.
We're good.
Yay! Quick question before we even talk about Doctor Who, because we did a fair amount of that last night, actually, with Kieran Moore from Starburst magazine. Sci-Fi London. Louis was saying he's seen you both in the house, but hasn't really heard any comments about what you've made of Sci-Fi London 2017. So can you reveal
it? Never asked. But I thought it was good. I mean, the thing is, you always... there are so many films they show, and you've got to kind of read the blurb, and you think to yourself, do I like this film or don't I like this film? And to be honest, it's very difficult to, it's usually my potluck whether you're going to like it or not.
Yeah.
I think it's usually, how can I put this? It goes along with a similar kind of vein as every year. You know, you get some ones you think are absolutely brilliant and blow you away, and there's other ones you think, oh, I wish I hadn't bothered this one. But, on the whole, up to the usual very, very high standard, I think, yeah?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And do we actually, in the way that some of the past alumni have become midweek drivettes, I'm thinking Alana Rain, I'm thinking Phil Lee, and so on, has there been anybody who's caught the Moore Stevens view and saying, yes, I think they should join the midweek drive people?
No, not a one, not a single person, no. We did get a few cards, actually, from some film producers.
Yeah, I've got a few cards to set, and I'll be sending you the details.
Excellent.
Shortly. They include the producer of The Fitzroy, which was one of the features, which is a sort of a homegrown kind of French-influenced surreal comedy. Mm. I'm trying to find the name of the film.
Not to worry, Fiona, as long as we tease ahead. The Fitzroy will do at this particular stage,
we
open up.
We've got an actor from one of our definite standouts. I'm just trying to find the title of it, but it was a fascinating clone-based drama. Mm.
Clone-based, yes.
Mm. Yeah, you know, Alan.
Did they send in the clones?
Actor.
Oh, that was excellent. Yeah, there was a smashing... Yeah, really clever that was.
I got the director of a film which was a crowdfunding success story. He started as... part of the 48-hour film challenge, and then 2 years later he now had a feature, so that took a bit more than 48 hours.
Yeah, very good indeed.
Well, you may not as yet, Fiona, have actually seen Holly McGrattan's entry into the 48-hour film challenge. Holly McGrattan, obviously, with Hannah Brown and some of the other midweek drivettes. Holly, share with Fiona what it was like doing that 48-hour film challenge. I mean, just work through it, because, again, the extraordinary lengths to which you went, being in separate countries... Scotland, England, and so on.
And we all decided we wanted to do it, and then realised at the weekend of the 48 hours we were all in very different places, so we had to send each other footage again and kind of work on that. So, I mean, it was a little fun project, and it was, something we learned a lot, and it was fun.
And
yeah.
You can go and see the non-director's cut version, because there'll be two versions going up.
To be, yeah.
Currently, how can Alan and Fiona access this?
YouTube.
Yes. It will be on mine. Can I send it to you and then you can post
it? I'll circulate it from the point of view. I shall circulate it there so they can work through that. Who knows? You might win. Unlikely, but you might win. You know,
it's really unlikely. You win.
It's good for people to watch it and think, good effort.
No. I mean,
I'm sure you will, but even if you don't, there's more than winning. As I said, the guy with the feature, he didn't win, but he got a feature film out of it.
Yeah.
There you
and
are.
Likewise,
there's more to life than winning.
Exactly. Likewise, I gather.
All the taking part that counts.
Is losing.
Yeah, but there's good losing and there's bad losing, is what I'm saying. Again, I gathered some of the Fitzroy makers met on the 48-hour film challenge and heard of other things like that. So, however you do, I'm sure you'll get something good out of it.
Exactly.
Or bad out of it. And then you'll never be able to show your face again.
It's
polite society.
I feel that it works well, and I think you did extraordinarily well with respect to that. And I say it's just a pity the technological challenge occasionally sort of took away the final
but then the
cherry
on top.
From
that, but I'll just have to
go for next year.
Yeah,
next year's one will be an absolute banger.
Precisely.
Yep.
As in a good sense. Very quickly, because time is time at this particular
area.
Yeah, like a big sausage.
A Lincolnshire sausage.
Clearly.
Yeah.
from Brighton. We only have a matter of moments. So far, the general
the general vibe
that came across from Kieran Moore, and I think last night, Holly, because you've seen the first two episodes of Doctor Who.
No, I had, it wasn't me. No.
Oh, you hadn't seen any. Oh, you hadn't seen any of them.
I saw that one, and I lasted 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You want to find the emojis? How is it shaping up, Fiona, for you in terms of, we've moved to emojis, we've had the historical, we've had the far future, we've got the three or four knocks at the door. Is it shaping up to be a Peter Capaldi classic season?
Well, I think too early to say. The first episode was really quite strong. The emoji one, I like the concept, I like the visuals, you know, I had some real issues with the characterization, which was actually pretty much the same problem I had with The Forest of the Night, you know, that the characters didn't really act like normal human beings.
There was an idea, wasn't there, that they had arrived on this planet, an old lady had died, and then, like a kind of virus, feelings of remorse had spread through these people, and as the robots were not programmed for remorse, they saw it as a kind of, you know, bad thing, and started killing people. Now, that makes sense, but the trouble is they've just come from Earth, where they must have left, you know, hundreds of thousands of people they knew and met and family and stuff behind, and you thought they would have been pretty upset anyway with this old lady dying. So they just didn't kind of think, there was no connection there, was it? It was like they just appeared at a, you know.
Yeah, I find it hard to believe that it would take that long for people on an alien planet leaving behind a dying Earth to actually experience grief. So, and similarly with the... you know, the doctor goes and he explains something to them and what's happened to them, and one guy basically says, well, obviously we'll just kill all the emoji bots, and you know, everybody basically goes, yeah, we'll do that. You know, nobody says, hang on, you know, so, I mean, presumably they only had the money for to pay for the one guy to speak. It seemed a bit,
It was certainly an improvement on Forest of the Night, which was just abysmal. But it was it still needed work, really.
Last week's, again, bearing in mind that we've got a brief time, a lot of people liked it, but it really didn't, again, it really didn't click with me. In fact, less so than the emoji bot one. I was expecting to enjoy it because I like a good historical. And certainly, yeah, you know, impressive, particularly when you consider it was all done in studio and like the Frost Fairs. But it just basically seemed to be, you know, the beast below with bonnets, really. And
Or Kill the Moon.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? Here's a creature. It's come out of nowhere. We know no idea how it got there. Do we save it? Do we kill it? Oh, let's save it. As the companions of a doctor saves it, story ends. I mean, it's basically, they seem to have this, one-size-fits-all storyline that they trot out every couple of seasons or so. And, you know, I think, I've seen this story like three times already. I think they did it as a torture when it first came out. So it's been, I've seen it about four times, haven't you, Fiona? And variations on it as well, you know, variations within, not a story being built around it, but suddenly it comes up. Like, for example, in the Doctor Who 50th anniversary, you know, they were going to do something, and then suddenly the companion comes in and says, no, we should do this instead, and so they do that, and it works out, and they say something. It's not only repetitive, it also messes with the character of Bill, because if she's supposed to be a new character, why is she acting exactly how Clara will act? Why don't you just say, nah, kill the thing? Or, I don't care.
I sense somehow you haven't necessarily converted Holly nor Ben to actually become avid fans of the show. But never mind, it's all about opinions and devices.
I'll wait till David Tennant comes back.
Okay,
if Tennant came back, I would switch off. I think he's the worst doctor ever. And I've just watched Series 3 of Broadchurch. And that is awful as well.
And
so Chibnall is going to be great, isn't he?
On that bombshell, we will say thanks to Phil Leonis in LA, Gabriella Peralta in Gibraltar, Ian Lennox, Dr. Sarah Jarvis, William Sitwell, and, of course, from the Royal Society for the Prevention of Accidents, Sheila Merrill, from the Lancashire Agricultural Society, Sally Monday, Louis Savvy, of course, and Alan Stevens and Professor Fiona Moore. Last two questions, please. Holly, go on. You're on a roll.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Yes, briefly it was.
And will you be joining us again in the future for
episode 4, of course.
Of course, yes.
Exactly. There we are. Great stuff coming on as far as science is concerned. Don't forget, Phil Leonis back again this evening, just after 7 o'clock, with his analysis of the classic John Wayne Western, The Searchers. We said it before, may the 4th be with you. A 1, 2, 3.
May the 4th be with you. I got scars.